Thank you. I'm Phil Silva at the ARS Laboratory in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I'm going to talk today about some methodology development and field testing of a GC to do online analysis of sulfur compounds at a swine facility. When you usually hear people talk about sulfur compounds, they're usually talking in terms of odors. I'm going to take you in a slightly different direction because a lot of our work comes from a different motivation here. And several of the issues that have led us to try and look at instrumental techniques like this are that, of course, we all know that air emissions from any agricultural facility, there's tons of different stuff there. I mean, you have greenhouse gases, you have ammonia, you have VOCs, you have particulates. As I mentioned, we typically think of sulfur compounds as odors. But one of the things that's emerged fairly recently is that a lot of these compounds can react, are very reactive in the air, and they produce then what's called secondary aerosol. Corey talked about it a little bit previously. And also on the next slide here, ammonia is the most well-known for this, but we have emerging evidence that some of the other stuff is also doing this. If you look in the, so we're focused on ammonia, VOCs, and the interplay with aerosols. If you look in the emissions in the literature for a lot of these compounds, especially the VOCs, you'll see numbers that are all over the map. And partly the question is that the analytical method, and partly is it the management methods, because you know, you've got all sorts of different ways of handling waste or whatnot. Many of these compounds are also very reactive, as I just mentioned, and it turns out that quite a few of them, the chemistry is unknown or unclear when you've got them together. This is the generic, I promise I won't put too much atmospheric chemistry for you, because I know I've got one foot in the atmospheric chemistry community, but this is the generic reaction scheme for formation of ammonium nitrate. And what happens is, you know, we know ammonia comes dominantly from a lot of the especially waste management and other any kind of agricultural processes going on. But if you've got a what we're increasingly seeing in certain sections of the country, if you've got a traditional agricultural area that's now being getting adjacent to a growing urban corridor, now you mix in all the urban sources of pollution, and in this case vehicles emitting VOCs and NOx eventually goes to nitric acid. Nitric acid and ammonia exist in equilibrium with ammonium nitrate, which now you get PM2.5 particulate formation, and that's equilibrium dependent on temperature and humidity. In the western part of the U.S., ammonium nitrate's the main issue. If you go to the east, it's you have a lot more sulfate because of all the coal-fired power plants and such. But what's become, this has been known for a while that ammonia does this. What's become increasingly clear is that some of the VOCs that are coming from agricultural emissions are also contributing over here, and some of them may be reactive in helping many of these processes go on. And one of the first thing that, which is getting lots of focus in the atmospheric chemistry community, is the organic analogs to ammonia. So ammonia is NH3. If you start putting carbon chains on them, you get amines, methylamine, dimethylamine, trimethylamine, and so forth. There's been, over the last 5 years or so, dozens, now I think we're well into the hundreds of papers talking about how amines are important into forming aerosol. Now, if you look in emissions inventories, the assumption when people even bother to look at it is that amines are dominantly coming from the same sources of ammonia, meaning agriculture. I think if you look at generic emissions inventories, the number is something like, they assume 90% is from agriculture. But if you look in the literature, again, emissions, fluxes of amines, they're either non-existent or you've got very high here. Again, is that analytical methods or management methods? The chemistry is unclear, and amines are even more complicated than ammonia because they can do acid-base chemistry, but then they can also do radical chemistry on the carbon chain, so they've got competing mechanisms. And recently, a few years ago, within the last couple of years, there's a couple of groups saying that these are even now important for climate. So not just a regional pollution problem, but the claim is these may be the key contributors to aerosol formation. And if anyone's familiar with the climate change and IPCC reports, you know that even still today, the giant error bar is not the greenhouse gases, it's the aerosol effect and the indirect effect. So there's lots of claims here, lots of uncertainty, but they're all sort of pointing to we need to be looking at some of these VOCs. That's for the amines, but when you start looking at the classes of other organics that are present in agricultural emissions, and you just go into the literature and look at people who've done sorbent tubes or canisters, there's whole slews of different compound classes. Now, a lot of these typical hydrocarbons, alcohols, and things, they've been pretty well studied because they're pretty common in the urban environment as well. But there are some other functional groups that are not as well studied. And so we've sort of been trying to put together some capability to look at some of these compounds with online methods in order to not only study the emissions, but to study the fate as to where they're going. So we focused on amines. I'm going to talk here sulfur. We're also looking at carboxylic acids. Those are the ones we were emphasizing so far, although there's other compound classes we'd like to build up the capacity to look at. So what do you need to understand this? Well, you need both gas phase data and aerosol phase data because you've got partitioning between the two phases, so from the gas phase to the condensed phase. You'd prefer to have some real-time or at least some online instrumentation because chemistry and meteorology can both be pretty quick and things can change pretty quickly. Even near source. You have need no low detection limits because lots of these things are in the low ppb to part per trillion phase and then very low in the particulate phase. So now if you look at this list of items, you go, that's pretty difficult to do any of those in some cases, and we're trying to do all of them. So some people would say we're nuts, but anyways, we're trying to do this. And if you have instrumentation and you have unlimited amounts of money, you can get direct sampling mass spectrometers to help you do a lot of this. Unfortunately, the way budgets are currently, that's not going to happen. So we're trying to build up some chromatography-based approaches that sacrifice some of the time but can still get the detection limits and some of the other information. So with that, let me go into the sulfur. Because sulfur compounds are one of these classes that seem to be reactive and may be contributing to some of this aerosol formation. We got this gas chromatograph that promises online detection of reduced sulfur compounds, hydrogen sulfide, thiols, sulfides. This is a standard method that's been used in the natural gas industry for many years, but used at the part per million level. So you can imagine it's much easier to detect at the ppm level than at the ppb and ppt level, what we're going to be focused on. So we got a new model that's sort of looking at trying to look at these lower detection limits. This is a very strange gas chromatograph if you're anyone who's familiar with GCs, in that it's an electrochemical detection process, not an ECD detector, but a redox reaction detector. So at the back end of the column, you actually have a liquid flow cell with platinum electrodes, and you do a redox reaction on the sulfur compounds as they come in. And the redox reactant is not the best, most environmentally friendly, since it's hexavalent chromium. But fortunately, all we have to do is get it in the cell. Once it's in use, we're reducing the chromium to chromium-3, so when we're all done, that won't be a problem to get rid of. Anyway, the first thing as we went into the field with this, we immediately found a major problem in that it has a very significant temperature drift problem. They don't observe this with the ppm version of the instrument, but with the ppb, because you're doing a lot more amplification of the signals, very small temperature drifts can cause the signal to crash out and go to zero, and then you're not detecting data. So this, of course, made us very worried. This is not a great method, but this is my last atmospheric chemistry slide here. When we actually went into a laboratory environment doing fundamental chemistry studies where you got very well-controlled temperature, it works fantastic. So this is an example. I've got a collaborator at UC Riverside where we do small chamber reactions. We put compounds in the chamber, do photochemistry. This is dimethyl disulfide. We put it in, turn on the lights. It immediately starts decomposing, and you produce SO2, and you produce particulate sulfate with nothing else in the chamber, just from the sulfur compounds. And so, and we got great data because the temperature was nicely controlled. So what we did in order to deal with this is modify the instrument to put in a Peltier cooling device and a separate thermometer check so that when we had a separate reading of how the temperature was in the GC, and it would feed back and change the temperature when we're in the field so we can actually get decent data when we're in a real world environment. So when you do that, you get a chromatogram. This is just a few, this is just a standard chromatogram, so dimethyl disulfide, hydrogen sulfide. It promises detection of SO2. I'm not going to talk about that. That's the one place where we think we see interferences in the actual ambient environment as opposed to the smog chamber. And this is dimethyl sulfide. It may be quite surprising, it was surprising to us, that a redox reaction detection method would be fairly specific to a single class of compounds for sulfur, but it turns out it's mostly serendipity in the redox oxidation reduction tables that carbon and nitrogen and hydrogen bonds don't react. If you've got a filter on top, you're knocking out most of the metals that could possibly react. So what you're left with is the sulfur compounds. We, of course, can't test every single compound you might see, but for example, methane, nitrous oxide, and other carbon-hydrogen compounds, we just don't get interference signals at all if you run those in the instrument. Ammonia, we get some interference at the SO2 peak at 500 ppm, which, of course, if we're getting 500 ppm, hopefully we got other problems. But it doesn't affect the reduced sulfur peaks. So let me go ahead. Now that we've got this instrument hopefully working much better and able to handle the temperature fluctuations, we go to the swine facility. And we were at a swine facility that the waste goes under into beneath the floor, and then it gets composted with wood chips. This is a schematic of the swine facility. And we've got four different rooms of hogs, about 1,000 hogs per room. The compost is cleaned out or turned as needed. And when we go there, as you might expect, when the compost gets turned underneath or mixed underneath the in the waste area, we get very large bursts of several of the reduced sulfur compounds, hydrogen sulfide, dimethyl sulfide, methane thiol, going to over 1 ppm in the case of hydrogen sulfide, very quickly over an hour period, and then dropping back to zero. So that's not close to baseline. So that's not surprising when you're mixing the compost that's what you're getting a large burst. What's interesting is that one of the other sulfur compounds doesn't look the same. Dimethyl disulfide, you see this rise later on, several hours delayed. That's consistent with what's in the literature about dimethyl disulfide is probably an oxidation product in the compost pile. So we're actually seeing the evolution of it from the compost. Correlations that just shows what I just showed here, the three reduced compounds, sulfur very well correlated, dimethyl disulfide not at all. Summary, we got this Medore method that we think shows promise for giving online sulfur data, 10-minute resolution, and we, in our first field studies, we're seeing immediately that sulfur, not all the sulfur compounds have the same temporal profiles. You definitely see different patterns depending on the waste handling. And this is, I will stop it there, but this is our air quality trailer. The point of all this is to get these set of instruments that can do online sampling. So we've got sulfur, we've got nitrogen, we've got carboxylic acids, we've got particle counting and sizing from 10 nanometers to 20 micrometers, and be able to take this suite of instrumentation to the field to give more real-time data for studies that are going on. So if you have a need for reactive reactive compound analysis and particulates, we'd be interested in collaborating, and I will stop there because I think I'm well over.
Thank you.